This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, we are back once again for the TJ and Todd tailgate. I'm TJ, Todd's my phone, as always. Kind of sad. This is a little bit of a sad podcast this week, seeing that we've had fun all season recording, doing our predictions, talking about what's going on, particularly Jameis Winston and all his little mishaps that he did at the beginning of the season. But Todd, as the best of the song 90s tournament goes on Places to Be Nation, where the show's been since September, Boyz II Men once said, at the end of the road, this is where we are right here. They didn't say the whole part, but till the end of the road is what they did say. And as we come to Monday's national title game, what's your takeaway for the 2014 season?
Well, I think it's awfully hard to repeat as national champions.
That is true.
That Florida State game was pretty crazy. I think that the SEC has kind of had to eat some crow and kind of take some medicine for the copious amounts of talk SEC fans have, or trash talk, SEC fans have dished out for the past 8 years or however long it's been.
Right.
It's been a crazy season. I don't think anybody, maybe Oregon, I think people might have saw Oregon in this game. I felt comfortable with Oregon. Ohio State, I got to admit, I was dead wrong on Ohio State.
Right.
And I think above all else, the playoff was a resounding success. I don't think you'd argue these aren't the best teams in the nation. Maybe you can argue Florida State wasn't more deserving than TCU. But, wasn't that a great day of football on January 1st?
Oh, it was tremendous. I mean, you had not only the Florida State, Oregon, Ohio State, Alabama games going on at nighttime. We had some pretty great bowl games to start out with. So, like you said, the Final Four was great. Oregon throttling Florida State, even though it was a close game at the half until Florida State started to turn the ball over multiple times, which made it to 2015's greatest internet meme and greatest internet vine of Jameis Winston falling onto his back heels and the ball coming out of his hand. Personally, my favorite one was Lance Stevenson coming out of nowhere and blowing the ball out of his hand. That was a good one. Or, I'm not sure if you've seen this one, they have an RKO out of nowhere of Jameis getting RKO'd onto the ground after the ball came out.
Yeah, the minute I saw that play, I said, it's going to be all over the internet.
Exactly.
Of all the people to make that mistake, it had to be Jameis.
And if I feel bad, he's going to be drafted very high come April. Hopefully he goes to Tampa Bay and not the Jets, or hell, hopefully he goes to St. Louis, which by the time he gets to be an actual starter, it might be in Los Angeles. But my question to you is, did the other January 1st, the top six or whatever marketing campaign they had for those January 1 games, did they live up to the hype as a lead-in to the Final Four?
Yeah, that was an awesome day of football. I mean, I think it started off the night before because we had the Orange Bowl between Mississippi State and Georgia Tech.
Yes.
Two really good programs duking it out. And then you had, January 1st, even, the Minor Bowl, the Citrus Bowl, you had my Missouri Tigers.
That's right.
Take care of business for the SEC against Minnesota.
One of the few teams to do so.
Yeah, it was, that was a good matchup. Minnesota, I got to say, I really like what Jerry Kill is doing with that program. I think they're going to be a really solid, 8 or 9 win team in the Big Ten for the next couple of years. How about the Cotton Bowl, Michigan State and Baylor? That was probably the best game of the day. That was insane game. I don't know if you're talking into that one.
I feel bad for the kicker. My God, speaking of good vines, that Baylor kicker who got launched into the sweet section.
Yeah, it wasn't enough that his kick got blocked and they're about to lose the game. He just got demolished. What I thought was funny, they didn't even mention it on TV. I think every viewer at home would got off the couch and started, pointing at the TV screen. And, there was no mention of it until it became, one of the most famous vines of the bowl season.
No kidding. I mean, it's amazing. I know the popular saying is keep your head in the swivel, but, I mean, was there any need for that debate or for the defensive back or lineman or, whatever position he was to really de-cleat that kicker as much as he did?
No, you could tell that was definitely a soccer kicker who got a scholarship to Baylor. He was not, he was not a football. A lot of times kickers in college probably played like wide receiver or
right.
quarterback or in Pee Wee football or high school. This guy was definitely, brought on the program for his legs, and he had a rough day. And he was not built like a football player, and he paid for it. But no, there's no reason to do it except for, it's like what they say, do it for the Vine. So
yeah. But I mean, I remember Ocho Cinco or Chad Johnson, wherever he goes by now, he was a high school kicker. So, I mean, like you just said, they did play a little wide out beforehand, but man, I just felt bad for that kid getting launched to the, like I said, the sweet section of Jerry World. Hell, if it was a Cowboys game, he may end up in Jerry and, I'm blowing the joke right here, in Chris Christie's box. That's how hard he got hit for that one. But, so we go into Monday. Ohio State, they're on their third quarterback. Oregon, they're the machine that has been demolishing people all season, except for the game they lost to Arizona at Arizona. So what gives in this one? Are we going to see the Ohio State all-run offense be able to control a ball against Alabama?
This is going to be a great game because there's two questions. One, is Ohio State as good as they showed against Alabama? Or is this just another sign that Alabama's stranglehold on college football is getting a little bit weaker? Or is Oregon as good as they showed against Florida State when they just demolished the Seminoles
right.
in that fourth quarter? I think that Oregon is clearly deserving of a spot in the national title game. But I think what you saw happen is they went from probably a two-score win over Florida State until the monstrosity you saw. Because I think, Jameis Winston and the rest of that Seminole team kind of imploded on themselves.
It did.
Weren't doing themselves any favors. So I don't know if they're going to hang 59 on Ohio State. But Ohio State, I mean, you can't spin it any other way. This year, you can't say Alabama wasn't hyped up for the bowl game or they didn't care. Like they said last year against Oklahoma. This was the game that they needed to win to get back to where Alabama feels they should be in the college football world. And Urban Meyer, I'm not an Urban Meyer fan, not an Ohio State fan, but you can say what you want about how he recruits athletes or what his athletes go on to do at the next level, but he can coach college football.
No kidding.
There's no way you can't spin it any other way. To beat Alabama the way that they did after being down 21-6 with their third string quarterback, that's probably the greatest coaching job I've seen this year.
Now, is this recruiting all for Urban, or is this a thing where if you would take Alabama's third-string quarterback, or I won't say Michigan because God knows Michigan was awful this year, but some of the major programs, they always say they're so deep because they're so rich with 5- and 4-star kids. Is this a thing where any of the top programs, you could take their third-string quarterback and put them in the situation and they would flourish like Ohio State's guys are doing?
No, I don't think so. I think that we saw in this game, and now that we're hearing with Braxton Miller, possibly jumping ship.
Right.
I don't know if that's become official yet or not, but he's at least window shopping.
He's window, yeah.
That, Cardale Jones, he's a highly touted recruit. You don't make it to Ohio State without being a very good football player.
True.
But you don't make it to Alabama, and you don't start on Alabama's defense without being a very good football player either. And Alabama's defense is not full of redshirt, they're not full of true freshmen or redshirt, sophomores and young guys. That's a fast defense. I saw them firsthand against Missouri, and, they made an 11-win SEC team look like little boys. So for the third-string quarterback to go into that situation, I don't care how many stars he has on Rivals or 24/7 or ESPN. There's something special with that quarterback. And I think that we're going to see a quarterback battle in the fall where he might jump to the number two. But JT Barrett, I mean, that's going to be – I think the question's going to be open. Is JT Barrett the presumptive starter, or did this do enough to at least make a discussion in camp? And then you've got to wonder, what is Braxton Miller going to do? Is he going to jump ship?
Right.
But either way, the third-string quarterback coming into that game, even with a great offense like Ohio State has, they do have a great offense, and that running back, Ezekiel Elliott, I mean, he's just going to be a stud at Ohio State. But that's a legendary performance, especially if they go on to win the national title. That's something that's going to be written on some plaque or in some, mural somewhere on that campus.
Well, that's the thing. With Cardell, if he had a great game against Wisconsin, the Big Ten title game, he's come in, played well for the situation against Alabama, especially with a month to prepare, which was weird not to see Saban be able just to thwart anything Ohio State could do, especially with his month to prepare for Ohio State's offense. Now, if he throws in a clunker on Monday night against Oregon, will those two previous games be forgotten about, and we'll just focus on a bad performance in the national title game and saying, well, he obviously wasn't ready for the big spotlight.
Yeah, and I think if he's not ready for the spotlight, to me that's fair. He's third string quarterback, he's not the starter. He was thrusted into the, he was just thrown in the flames, thrown in the fire during the two toughest games of the season so far against a very good Wisconsin team and against a very good Alabama team. So it's not what fans want to hear, and I'm sure, Cardell himself, such a high-level athlete, you don't make excuses for yourself. But I think a rational observer that's not a Buckeye fan or, rabid follower of the program would say, hey, it's just bad breaks, and, your top two guys got hurt, and, Cardell comes out and throws a clunker on Monday. But, Oregon is without one of their All-American cornerbacks for this game. So I think that this is going to be a really fast and fun game to watch. And I think that if you can play that well against Alabama, you're going to have a decent day against Oregon. I think the real question is going to be, if he does well on Monday, what does that do for J.T. Barrett coming off of injury with the amazing season he had? And we saw something similar at Texas A&M, where Kenny Hill came out of the gates just firing all cylinders, and it looked like he was going to be right behind the discussion, and he's not even at the program anymore. That's not going to happen to J.T. Barrett, but I think if you string these three games together in a row, and you put these kind of legendary performances where you're putting the team on your back and you're down by one or two scores late, I think that's going to be enough to at least put you in a discussion, training camp.
And, we'll get to Kenny Hill leaving the A&M program. Looks like he's going to go to TCU and to be the backup for Boykin as they go on and try to put their claim in being in the playoff like they, it could have been this year if Ohio State would have thrown out a terrible game against Alabama. Then the noise would have turned up even more for TCU. But, luckily for the playoff committee, Ohio State pulled off what Ohio State did. My goodness. Could you imagine if Ohio State would have just gotten blown out 56-3 as compared to winning?
Forget Ohio State. I mean, I think Ohio State squashed all of that with the Big Ten title game.
Yes.
To me, that proved it. That proved enough to me that, hey, they deserve to be there because Wisconsin was just on a tear. I mean, we saw in their bowl game against Auburn. Auburn wasn't great this year, but they're a very good team. So to just absolutely dominate a premier Big Ten school like Wisconsin, they're of the new Big Ten since Nebraska's joined and, things kind of shaked up. Wisconsin for the past 4 or 5 years has been an elite team in the Big Ten, and they just dominated Wisconsin. The team, I think, didn't deserve to be there, as we saw, was Florida State. The question was, which conference was kind of the odd man out? The Big 12 was, but they didn't bring in TCU.
Right.
The Big Ten got Ohio State, which turned out to be the right move. And the ACC, which is, arguably the weakest of the Power Five conferences, got the defending champ Florida State. I think there's no way you can't put in the undefeated defending champ into the playoffs. But I think it was clear to me that TCU should have put Florida State's spot.
Yeah, I think the playoff committee was really hoping that Georgia Tech would have held on to that game instead of losing in the ACC title game, because had they lost, then you could say, well, you're team number four, we'll keep TCU at three, or Ohio State, you move up, and you know, we move forward to our playoff. But you know, it was damn near impossible, like you said, to take Florida State out of the mix for there. But you know, coming into next year, you know, Florida State, they're going to be still very talented. Do you put them in the top five, as in, okay, here are these five teams we're going to roll out for 2015? Or do you put TCU back in there and say, hey, TCU, you're in the top four, top five. You're positioned to, if you win out, just like Florida State, you get into the playoff for next year.
I think you got to put TCU in that spot. And I think TCU really made a claim to be right beneath the, let's see here. So my biggest question with Florida State next year is going to be, how do they replace Jameis Winston?
Braxton Miller, maybe.
If they get Braxton Miller, one, that's just not fair for the rest of college football world, that he would go there. You know, it's just, come on, like, he should have to go to, like, some conference USA team.
Tulsa.
Or, Tulsa or, somewhere like that. Don't put him on Florida State. But that would answer those questions right away. Florida State's bringing in either the one, it's not even the top-rated or second-rated recruiting class, but they're going to be a very good team next year. Georgia Tech is a good team. They had a very surprising year, but the ACC top to bottom is basically going to be like it was this year. You're going to have one elite team, Florida State, and then you're going to have one pretty good team, and then you're going to have one, decent team that can knock you off if you're not playing your A game. But it's going to be Florida State's conference again next year.
Well,
if they're outside of that top four, they're still going to be undefeated, more than likely, and they're going to find a way in there. But I think, as of right now, you've got to put TCU in there after what they showed this year.
Well, let me ask you this, though. From what we saw this year in Florida State laying the egg they did, could the playoff committee look into this and say, well, we saw what happened here. TCU, you have one loss to Baylor or Texas or Oklahoma or whomever. We'll put you in over the ACC champion because we're afraid of the same thing happening again this year as compared to last year.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think Florida State kind of has an Ohio State deal going for them where they're a team that the networks and the fans and the voters want to see in that playoff spot.
Yeah, of course.
They don't want to. I'm not going to say they don't want to see TCU in there, because if TCU earns it, they go undefeated next year, they're going to be in a national, title playoff picture. But TCU versus, Ohio State or TCU versus Alabama is not nearly as enticing as Florida State versus Alabama.
Especially with Jameis Winston and that whole storyline coming in. I think that also sold Florida State going up against Oregon.
Yeah, I thought that game was going to be, it was fast-paced and really high-scoring, but it was only one side. But I thought, that game is going to be like a, kind of a Big 12 style shootout, back and forth, scoring, and the last man standing wins. And it didn't really turn out that way. But I agree. I think Jameis Winston by himself was such a powerful brand that he gave Florida State a little bit of an edge over TCU. And the frustrating thing for TCU is TCU isn't Florida State and they're not Ohio State. They don't just reload every year.
Yeah.
TCU gets one of these seasons, every 5 years or so. They're not going to tank next year, but you can't hedge your bets behind them being back in the top five, because they just don't recruit at the level of Florida State, of Ohio State, of Alabama. They don't have the facilities those programs have. They just can't. I mean, they've got the benefit of a conference that's winnable, but you can't. I would be much more confident in Florida State being undefeated this time next year than TCU. That's why if you're a TCU fan, you're so mad right now, because this is a once-in-a-lifetime or twice-in-a-lifetime season where everything worked out. Oklahoma tanked. Oklahoma State wasn't any good. Texas was still awful.
Right.
You got the benefit of the doubt over Baylor, and things still didn't fall your way. So next year, when you have a stumble or you hit a roadblock somewhere and lose to Iowa State or Texas Tech, it's just going to make this season much more frustrating.
Well, I heard that they're returning 10 of their 10 starters in the offense next year. So, you know, you got to think there that gives them a good shot to come back to where they were, or if not, try to roll 60 on every opponent next year.
I think Boykin's got to be, you know, maybe not a favorite for, you know, to win Heisman, but right. He's definitely going to be in New York next year.
Yes, exactly. Or I saw a thing with Kenny Hill, you know, as we said earlier, he's leaving A&M, he's leaving the program for, I guess, the off-field issues he had, plus being benched halfway through the season for the freshman. I've seen reports that he's going to TCU. Does that help him out in case something happens to Boykin to where he gets hurt midway through the season or during the season?
Well, Kenny Hill was a young player. He's inexperienced. And when I mean inexperienced, I mean he put up some really gaudy video game numbers earlier this year, but you don't really know what you have out of your quarterback until he has a bad game, or more than likely he has two or three bad games, or he loses a game he shouldn't lose, or, you know, some sort of adversity hits him in the face. And I think that, for being such an offensive genius, I really think Kevin Sumlin mishandled the whole Kenny Hill situation. And I'm not going to doubt that Kenny Hill seems to have some off-the-field sort of problems or a bad person. I mean, he doesn't seem like a very good, you know, leader or motivator yet, but I really think they pulled the cord on Kenny Hill really, really quickly.
Yeah.
I think he's obviously got raw talent. I mean, we saw him, South Carolina wasn't any good this year, but still, on any Power 5 team, if you can put up those kind of numbers, that's impressive. So, yeah, I think with a coach like Gary Patterson that can, maybe groom him a little more productive and, you know, better leader at that quarterback position, there's not going to be very many better backups in that conference, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, no kidding, especially with Texas' situation or Oklahoma. We don't know what's going on with them. Oklahoma State, they got to retool. Hell, Baylor's losing Bryce Petty to the NFL draft, so they're a big question mark coming into next year. And, you know, Tech is who Tech is. You know, they can score some points, but we really don't know what's going on with them since last year was such a big clunker. So, as we said, Braxton Miller, he's leaving Ohio State, potentially Florida State, potentially LSU, potentially, I guess, any big name. He's basically like a free agent quarterback if Drew Brees would leave the Saints. You know, a lot of teams are clamoring for him to come in and be the starter at their university. My question to you, Todd, is if you're an NFL executive, and he's coming into the draft, the 2016 one, you know, is there a red flag that the minute there is a quarterback controversy or quarterback competition at Ohio State, he flees the coop?
Well, I think the key in that question is the agents and scouts are going to know a lot more about what really happened at Ohio State than we do. On the surface, it looks like Braxton Miller just, he can't handle it, you know, but
right.
I just want to say I am kind of sick of this deal where I don't like these situations where a player can just walk with impunity. I mean, he's going to be able to, if I'm not wrong here, because of his, you know, class, he's going to be able to play immediately. Isn't that right?
He will be, but isn't it the same thing as a coach, like, you know, just up and leaving a university, you go somewhere else for a better job? Hell, Pitt's guy just left to go to Wisconsin. Pitt's now left to hold the bill for recruits that are coming in.
Yeah, and I think if the NCAA is so serious about, you know, retaining this amateur status, this sort of move goes against the values of being a student athlete. You know, Ohio State is an incredible school. It's an outstanding football program. Braxton Miller has been in the Heisman discussion the past three seasons, so it's not like he's, you know, been relegated to obscurity. I hate when players can just walk off like this and go start somewhere else. I mean, it was a little different, but we saw something similar with Russell Wilson when he left NC State and went to Wisconsin and immediately just became one of the hottest names in the draft.
Yeah.
I think if you do this, I'd like to see Braxton Miller go light it up at Conference USA or Central Florida, or, you know, do something like that. If he goes to Florida State, great for Florida State, then we're right in the national title hunt again. But yeah, I think you've got to be concerned, one, if you're Florida State, is this the kind of guy you want taking over the reins from Jameis Winston after all the stuff that's been talked about with Jameis Winston's character and you know, hygiene? Do you really want this kind of guy as the new leader of the program? And two, when he entered the draft, yeah, there's no question that, you know, physical tools alone don't mean anything in the NFL. You know, just ask Blaine Gabbert. you gotta have something between the ears. You gotta be a pretty tough guy. You gotta have a good head on your shoulders. So I think it's gonna be a legitimate question going in. If indeed he, you know, walks off, and I don't know, has he actually said he's leaving for sure yet, or still?
I think it's still speculation. It's speculation, okay. Especially for probably he doesn't want to say anything coming into, you know, this huge national title game. But I did see something online or on Twitter that it was the standard, you know, poll clickbait tweet of, hey, retweet for Ohio State or favorite for Oregon of who you think's going to win the national title game. And I don't know if he did this by accident, but the talk was that Braxton favorited the tweet for Oregon. So I you know, that kind of shows you he's going to be leaving, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, maybe he got, you know, maybe he got hacked,
confused.
You know, those infamous Twitter hackers, but
yeah.
I think at this point for the kid's career, I don't think he can come. I don't know much about Urban Meyer, but I'd say after what I've seen from his backup and then the backup to the backup, you can afford to lose it. Yeah, there, if you bring him back, I mean, what's the point now after all this discussion and all this smoke?
True.
You know, really, I would just say it's one of those deals where you're kind of, you know, showing him the door without showing him the door. You don't want to pull a Scully, but yeah, there's no point in coming back for Braxton Miller, and I'm sure schools will be lining up for his services.
Yeah, I mean, we saw, you remember seeing LSU this year. If they had Braxton Miller there, don't you think they can take down Alabama in that game at Death Valley?
What, LSU has, you know, they've kind of been in search of a, you know, elite quarterback. I know Mettenberger has a lot of great pro tools, but he, I don't think he was ever the college player that Braxton Miller was at his peak. Or, you know, look at what Ole Miss did against TCU. What if they could, you know, have a guy like Braxton Miller playing quarterback instead of Bo Wallace?
Oh, I remember my best friend from I grew up with back home in Pittsburgh, Joe. He sent me an instant message the day after Bo Wallace led Ole Miss over Alabama, going, "Hey, Bo Wallace, I think he's pretty good. I think Steelers should draft him sometime in the NFL draft." And as we saw come later on the season, that's not going to happen. As probably our old Bo Wallace is probably going to go undrafted coming up next year. But before we go on to what happened with coaches, you know, Harbaugh going over to Michigan and what may pertain into 2015, we didn't touch on Oregon and that side of the ball for Monday. You know, Oregon, they came close against Cam Newton's Auburn. You know, that was the last time we've seen them in this type of light. This team feels different than that team that lost the Newton in the BCS title game. So is this the year they finally, you know, reach the pinnacle and take home the college football national championship?
I think so. They're a 7-point favorite. I think
yeah.
That's a fair line for them after not only the great performance they put up against Florida State, but the great performance Ohio State had coming back against Alabama. I think the biggest difference when I watched Oregon this year compared to years past is that defense swarmed Jameis Winston. You know, they were in his face. They were, and Jameis Winston was playing a good game until about the third quarter when that defensive line, which to me was the biggest question on Oregon, is that defensive line going to be able to get enough push and enough pressure on quarterbacks in the Pac-12 where every team, even the bad ones, have, you know, an awesome quarterback to really make a difference? And I think we've seen it this year. Oregon's defense is fast, they're athletic, they can play against the league competition. They played, you know, well in the Pac-12, which has a lot of very powerful offenses. They played well against Florida State, all things considered, and Florida State has one of, if not the best, offenses in the country. I think that this is the most complete team that Oregon has had in the past, you know, 5 or 6 years, so they've kind of had this new surge in, wins and relevancy. And I think Marcus Mariota is probably the best player Oregon's ever had.
Yeah.
And when I watched them against Florida State, I saw an offense that they were moving at will against that Florida State defense, and it was frustrating for Florida State because it wasn't what you expect when you think of a high-flying Pac-12 team. They weren't, you know, taking the top off of the defense and bombing for 25, 30 yards. It was, you know, like, you know, Mariota would just toss eight-yard completions in a row, and before you know it, they're just right there on the, you know, right, they're right there on the 20-yard line. It's, I don't know how you stop it. They're so good at all positions on offense. Now their defense is solid. Yeah, I think that they're going to take this one home.
You know, you said he's been their best player in Oregon history, which it's amazing to think back to, you know, going back to the early 2000s with Joey Harrington as their quarterback, to even, you know, later on, Dennis Dixon, to LaMarcus James, to, or LaMichael James, or DeAnthony Thomas. I mean, they've had some huge, huge players that have been extremely talented, but you're right, there's never been one that's going to go this high in the draft and be a surefire can't-miss prospect like Mariota. I mean, I know Harrington, I think, went one or two to the Lions, but Mariota feels like he's going to go and be successful no matter where he ends up at. Or do you think that the NFL teams, specifically Tampa, who I believe has the number one pick, they're going to overlook Mariota and go for Winston as their top draw?
Well, I think for Tampa Bay, I can't blame them for going for Jameis Winston, considering their Tampa Bay is a franchise that needs a franchise player, a guy that sells jerseys, you know, by the dozens and thousands in the worst way. They're just kind of there. I mean, I think they've got some nice pieces, but they don't have a guy like Jameis Winston that I think, especially for a franchise in Florida, he'll have that Johnny Manziel effect where the minute he's drafted, people are, you know, overloading the servers trying to get that jersey. I don't know if I think either is going to be a, you know, full-time great quarterback. I don't think that either of them has that, you know, Andrew Luck kind of quality. Where you just kind of knew Andrew Luck, regardless of what Stanford did, you knew that he was going to be just a great NFL quarterback. I think both can be very good. And I don't think you're going to be wrong both either. I'd rather have Marcus Mariota just because I think both, they play different, but they put up similar, you know, similar numbers. They have a similar effect on offense. But you know Mariota is a, from what we can tell, a model citizen. He's a great leader. He's a winner. He's not going to get you in trouble. He doesn't have the vices and the enablers that Jameis Winston will have once he goes in the NFL when he's hounded by the media everywhere he goes. So, I don't know. I really like Mariota. I think that, you know, he's a winner. He's a great quarterback. I think he's got all the other intangible things you look for in a quarterback outside of the fact that he's probably the best player in the country, you know, just with his arm alone.
Right. Let me ask you this here. If you're Oregon, and I loved how they did this when they scored their first touchdown against Florida State in the semifinal, why do you ever kick? You know, if it's 4th and 5 and you're on your own 30, why punt? Just go for it. You have a good chance of making it. Or hell, an extra point. Just go for 2 every time. What is the point of kicking with Oregon's offense?
I think that, you know, probably you want to look conservative and I don't know, I guess efficient, you know, especially in a game like that where the minute that doesn't work, that's all they're going to talk about on the news is that 1/4 of an inch you went for on like the 32-yard line that, you know, backfired. But no, I agree. When I watched that game, it was just everything they did was working.
Yeah.
And it was all at 4 or 5 yards at a time, you know. I mean, it eventually open up a wound in the Florida State defense and, you know, gash them for, you know, 40 yards or something. But it would just keep hitting, you know, Mariota would just be getting rhythm and keep hitting this 6 yard complete,
right.
7 yard, 8 yard, 8 yard, 8 yard. And it was no matter what Florida State was doing, they couldn't stop it. So I'm going to be interested to see how Ohio State handles it. I'm not sold on Ohio State being an elite defense. I think they're very good, but I think Florida State is also very good. And they almost gave up 60 to Oregon. So I think Oregon takes this one, and I would take the points, too. I see Oregon, maybe win this one by 10 or more.
Hell, 4th and inches in the 32, 5 wide. 4th and 4 from the 32, 5 wide. 1st and 10, 5 wide. Just constantly go 5 wide. Run this like a Madden offense. Throw 2 guys deep, 2 guys over the middle, and the last person to safety drop off. Make Ohio State stop you that way, because as you said, once Mariota gets into a rhythm, it's very hard to stop him. He turns into a quarterback playing beer-in-hand football where, you know, he's not going to be touched. So I agree with you there. And do you take the over in this game as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that one. And, you know, I'm with you. I would like to disagree and say Ohio State's going to win. But from what I've seen with Oregon through their games for the Pac-12 to how they beat Michigan State, who was going to be the Ohio State of the Big Ten up until Ohio State went into East Lansing and beat them, I believe it was in November. They handled them pretty well in the second half when they went up to Eugene to play the Ducks. But, all right, so we'll move on here. The big news, aside from the, aside from Winston going pro, aside from the national title game, it's Jim Harbaugh going back to Michigan to coach his alma mater, to, you know, reclaim the glory he had at Stanford and to bring the Wolverines back to where they were when Brady Hoke took over. My question to you is this a quick turnaround, or is this something that will take maybe a year or two, like Charlie Strong in Texas?
Well, nothing against Charlie Strong, but I think this is a much better hire. This is the kind of hire that Texas probably imagined they were going to be making when they ended up with Charlie Strong. But
I agree with that.
I think no matter what, when you look at this Michigan team this year, yeah, it's going to take a year or two. But really, there's no guarantee it's going to work. But it's one of those things where there's really no better decision that the AD of Michigan could have made besides hiring Jim Harbaugh.
Right.
So even if it fails, you can't say Jim Harbaugh has bounced out in 3 years because he can't handle, or he goes back to the NFL or something. You can't blame Michigan, because that's the biggest, safest, most home run hire you can make in not just college football, but football period right now, because every NFL team basically would love to have him, besides, maybe the Patriots. it's going to take a couple of years, but, Michigan is going to be back in a big way. And if I'm Urban Meyer, I'm doing everything I can to win a national title this year, because, the living rooms and the Rust Bowl, there's going to be a pretty cool guy that's just made a, he almost won a Super Bowl, and Coach Colin Kaepernick, and was one of the coolest, That's going to be there's going to be some pretty fierce recruiting battles here in the Big Ten between Urban Meyer and Jim Harbaugh.
Now, let's say Michigan didn't get Harbaugh because he stayed at San Francisco, or he went to Oakland, or he went to Chicago, or wherever. Or he went back to Philadelphia because Chip Kelly is still there. Would we be in the middle of a Les Miles to Michigan debacle if Harbaugh would have turned him down?
Les Miles is linked to like every major program that ever has a coaching vacancy. Yeah. Les Miles is a candidate. So yes, we would be in the middle of that controversy. If I'm Les Miles and I'm not getting Michigan's going to pay Les Miles a good paycheck, but only Jim Harbaugh is going to get that kind of, Jim Harbaugh is making Nick Saban type money.
Right.
And Les Miles is not making that in Michigan or anywhere else. I would say Les Miles it'd be a lateral move, because I don't believe Les Miles has the years left in him. I don't believe he has he's got what it takes to really turn that program into a national title contender fast enough to where those fans aren't going to push him out of the door. I think that Harbaugh was the absolute best move they could have made. And if Jim Harbaugh would have turned down Michigan's job to Oakland, that would be probably, that's like one of the biggest upsets of all time. Because I fully believe that no matter who goes to Oakland, Tom Brady could be traded to Oakland tomorrow and we'll never hear from him again.
It happened to Richard Seymour. He went to Oakland from the Patriots, and we never heard from him again. So that's
Randy Moss.
Yeah.
Warren Sapp. Didn't Jerry Rice go there?
He did. Actually, I think that was the year they went to the Super Bowl. So we kind of heard from him there when they played the Buccaneers, and their center went crazy. I think that was that Super Bowl. But your point is correct right there, with people just going to, pun intended, the black hole and just completely evaporated, you know, coming off from existence. Now, if you're Barry Alvarez, do you fire your coach next year just to coach in a bowl game like he did this year, like he did with the Rose Bowl a couple years ago? Just because it seems like he comes in, gets all the glory, and takes off the coaching check from being the AD as well.
Who's that?
Barry Alvarez in Wisconsin.
The rumor, the rumor there has always been that the coach doesn't really do any coaching.
No.
That was one of the biggest knocks against Arkansas, shelling out so much money for Brett Bielema. Barry Alvarez, there's always a Barry Alvarez is really the one that called the shots. It's kind of one of those Jerry Jones situations where it's like, you're the head coach, but really Barry Alvarez is the head coach.
Right.
And he got so much clout in that program that nobody can really stand up to him and tell him to back off. So, yeah. I think Barry Alvarez, if you work with Barry Alvarez, you're only one wrong decision away from being fired no matter what. So, I could see that happening. But I think Barry Alvarez, is really one of the premier athletic directors in the country for what he's done at a school like Wisconsin.
Right.
To compete against the Michigan and Ohio State of the world, but he's definitely a lesser known, less controversial version of the Jerry Jones side.
Yeah, exactly. But I think Jerry Jones could, and he would get a bonus for coaching in, say, the Super Bowl. Oh, yeah, he would step down if Jason Garrett would mysteriously not be able to coach and coach the Cowboys and especially if they would go on to win it, he would take all the credit for being able to be the coach and lead his team to a Super Bowl victory. Definitely. You're 100% right with Barry Alvarez and Jerry Jones.
Well, I think at those kind of schools, just like with the Cowboys, Jason Garrett, Jason Garrett is not Jamie Jones. He's certainly not Bill Parcells.
Yeah.
He is, you can't be one of those guys under that kind of boss. And I think in Wisconsin, they could never... I don't think they could, whatever dream world where they could bring in a guy like Harbaugh.
No.
Or really, or Nick Saban or, one of these big
control freaks.
Even a guy like Bo Pelini, somebody that, has that type A personality that they're the boss and that it's their program. You'll never see that kind of guy at a program like Wisconsin. And Wisconsin is only like one of the, ones we know. I'm sure there are many more programs with just as annoying athletic directors. So for any of our Wisconsin fans listening, you're not seeing them out.
Exactly. All right, one last thing to close the season up. Today, the College Football Hall of Fame inductees came out. It's a long list of 17 guys on here. Let me read off five here and tell me which one you would pay money to go see them get enshrined. Ricky Williams, running back from Texas. Bill Snyder, current coach at Kansas State. The Boz, Brian Bosworth from Oklahoma. Dick Geron, the old coach, I believe coach for the Lions. He was a running back for Yale. Zach Thomas, the old Miami Dolphins linebacker who played at Tech. Or the embattled former head coach of Ohio State who left with his tail between his legs for the NCAA, bullied him away, Jim Tressel. Those five are getting in. Which one are you paying money for to see them get enshrined in this Hall of Fame?
Well, living in Kansas City, in what's now half Big 12 and SEC country, I've been watching the jury in the Big 12 for, many years. I got to go Bill Snyder.
Okay.
I think Bill Snyder, kind of like what they say in like boxing or, the wrestling or MMA world, pound for pound, when you consider where he coaches, which I've been to Manhattan, Kansas, and it's in the middle of nowhere. It's not a academically prestigious school. It's very hard to get guys like Tyler Lockett to go to Manhattan, Kansas, or a guy like Colin Klein. To get that kind of talent to go to Manhattan is not easy. So the fact that he's built that program up from, you know, one of the absolute worst historically in all of D1 or FBS or whatever you want to call it, to a school that's always in the conversation for a Big 12 title is incredible. And especially when you consider that K-State was stupid enough to fire him like 5 years ago.
I know.
And yeah. You know, he came right back within like, what, 2 years or 3 years. He had him, you know, playing in the Cotton Bowl or, you know, really, you get him right there in the top five. So I definitely had to go with Bill Snyder. I think he's a just absolutely amazing coach. One of the most legendary all time. You think of what he has to go against Texas and Oklahoma, Nebraska for many years. Even, you know, before that, I mean, think about how good, you know, programs like Colorado used to be.
Right.
Missouri, you know, Gary Pinkel, Missouri recruiting against them. It hasn't been easy, but he's kind of been the, you know, the rock of that athletic program. Jim Tressel, I think, is another great coach that just, I agree, he kind of, he was the, knowing what we know about the college football landscape now.
Oh, yeah.
With, you know, I think it really, one of the things I thought of outside of how horrible and, you know, just tragic it was, once the Penn State story broke, I just kind of thought, how can we ever be mad at, like, a guy like Jim Tressel now? Like,
right.
It really, like, what kind of puts that kind of crap in perspective where it's just like, that was, cause at the time, I mean, I'm sure you remember, that was just, like, the biggest thing that had happened.
Deal.
You know, are they going to get the death penalty? Is this going to be, like, the end of, you know, Ohio State football, and all it's, you know, what's going to happen to Earl Pryor, what's going to happen to Jim Tressel, and now it's just like, you know, come on, that's just an awful way for a legendary coach to end his career there.
And it's weird why he never got another job. I mean, Pete Carroll was in huge crap storm at USC with all those allegations that happened after he left. Butch Davis always gets rehired after all of his stuff he's done with recruiting at Miami. Dan Erickson also got new jobs after leaving a place where he left in a mess, also at Miami. Coincidence? Maybe. But Jim Tressel, you know, it's weird that his name never comes up for jobs whenever, like Nebraska. Why isn't Jim Tressel being, you know, Nebraska is where I got the new guy. But, I mean, a major program. Why is his name never being brought up?
Well, you got to remember Jim Tressel, and by that time at Ohio State, I think that he was in a position where unless something like that Terrell Pryor deal happened, he wasn't going to get forced out. But I think this was at kind of the end of that embarrassing run Ohio State had of, you know, cracking the bed in big games. And everyone had kind of just dismissed them as, okay, yeah, they're going to win the Big Ten, but then they're going to lose the SEC. They're going to lose to, you know, whoever they play in the BCS Bowl or national championship. So I think as selfish and as, you know, entitled as they are, people had probably felt that they had, you know, hit a ceiling with Jim Tressel at that point. I think that this might be one and maybe the most famous of many incidents people close to that program probably knew happened under Jim Tressel. And then, of course, unlike Pete Carroll, you know, Pete Carroll is not necessarily young, but I believe he's younger than Jim Tressel. And Pete Carroll, he's just cool. I mean, he ran like the millennials version of the U, USC. But, you know, he's got that kind of, he's not a stiff, old, you know, crotchety man like Jim Tressel. You know, when you see Pete Carroll, he's cool, the players love him, you know, he's always got this really exciting brand of football wherever he goes, they win all the time. I think that, and if you were going to have a job interview between the two of them, it's like a no-brainer why people would pick Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
Even though I think Tressel is a great coach, I just, age, you know, unless you're Nick Saban, or you're one of those guys who's got the title the rest of the year,
someone come by the house right now and ring the doorbell, which is a fitting way to end the college football season right there. So, Todd, I thank you very much for coming along this year and always coming on every week to do all of our college football talking.
Yeah, you too. And hey, I want to say thanks. I was, you know, we kind of do these things on like a whim and we kind of just record these and go, but I took a look at some of our episodes on Place to Be Nation and how many people are actually downloading and listening to these things. And I got to say, hey, I figured like we had five loyal fans. I'm very surprised, happy with all of our fans that they enjoyed this year, and hopefully we'll be back next year with bring some more guests on and do this all over again.
I would like that very much, and I'm also glad the show's producers here, Cooney and Maggie, were able to say their goodbyes as well, just right now. So, like I said, for myself, for Todd, thank you very much for listening this year. Todd actually said the best, and we'll catch you probably in the fall of 2015. Thank you for downloading this week's episode of Todd Tailgate. For more information on the show, go to PlayStationNation.com, or you can follow the show on Twitter at CJ Masterson, Todd Jensen, or at PlayStationNation.